You know those words that we heard just a minute ago from John the Revealer are so hopeful. Some of the words in John's letter from the island of Patmos are scary. Many of the passages are odd and sound like the result of hallucinogenic drug use. But the words from Revelation today are comforting and hopeful. See, the home of God is among mortals. He will dwell with them, and they will be his peoples, and God himself will be with them. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death and mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first things have passed away. We long for that day. We yearn for a time where death and pain and crying and mourning will be no more. We want God to be with us now. And you know what? God is with us now. Even in this mortal life where there is still crying and pain and death and mourning. Since the mid-1960s, there's been a theological claim that God is dead, that God no longer exists. Since the birth of the United States, there's been a tendency toward deism, the theological belief that God is no longer working in his creation, that he's something akin to a great clockmaker, one who created the world but is no longer involved in it. So often we miss God's active engagement in our world. So often we write God off. How can God be involved in a world where there is suffering and crying and pain and death? How can we put our hope in God when so often our world seems so untrustworthy and out of control, so lacking in hope? Mary experiences that same frustration. Lord, she said, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. Where were you, Lord? Why are you not intervening? Where is our hope? Stay with that story. Don't tune out at the moment of Mary's questioning and frustration. Jesus does engage. He takes the moment of pain and crying and even death and turns it around. Out of death there is life, and out of pain and suffering there is hope. Jesus, God, turns death around, assures us that there is more than death, that death does not have the final say. I had met Laura 2 years before, briefly, at the family reunion of this large family. They had made a biannual tradition to gather the 7 children and their offspring who now live in New York, Illinois, Florida, Texas, and Georgia. When I met her, she seemed especially frail. Her hearing was poor at best, which made conversation difficult. It was easier to ignore her than to make an effort to enter into conversation. I was at this reunion as a priest hired to celebrate the Eucharist for the family, some of whom refused the notion of a female priest. I brought my young teenage daughter Holly with me because her best friend was a granddaughter in this family. The whole experience was not at all what I had expected. We were housed in a 1-bedroom cabin with 12 other people. We were offered a glass of wine that came from a box and was pink. I was offended and insulted. I had driven 11 hours to serve at this reunion, and how was I rewarded? I was not. Then my daughter started running fever and having a severe back pain. The nearest hospital was 45 minutes away, and we went. Thankfully, the emergency room was not a busy trauma center, and she was saved quickly and treated for a kidney infection. We made the winding, bumpy, rough way back to this much less than perfect situation. I celebrated the Eucharist the next morning and could not get out of there quickly enough. As a reward from our home, from our experience in the northern border of Tennessee on the way home to South Georgia, we spent the night at the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead. That was where we belonged. With fluffy towels, thick robes, marble baths, and only two people sharing a room. 2 days after we returned home, there was a card from Laura asking about Holly's health, noting that she had been praying for Holly ever since. I was stunned. This woman that I had hardly spoken to because it was inconvenient and awkward had gone to the trouble to send me a card and pray for my child, who she had not really even gotten to know. Just shy of 2 years later, Laura died. As her husband Tom drove to work, he was nearly blinded by a bright flash of light. He naturally assumed the light was from headlights of an oncoming car on the tree-canopied narrow two-lane road. No car accompanied that light, so he tried not to think about the phantom flash, but it remained in the recesses of his mind all day. What had that been? There was really no scientific or practical explanation. When Tom returned home at the end of the day after work, he discovered Laura in her bed. No breath, no pulse. The image of the flash of light immediately came to his mind. Was that a sign? An assurance of her place in light? Did God's spirit crash through the realm of our time and make God's presence known in this moment? Worldly knowledge would try and explain this experience away, come up with an explanation to secularize Tom's experience on the morning of his wife's death. And sometimes there are very natural and scientific explanations for events in the world. And sometimes there are not. Sometimes God crashes in and jerks us out of the scientifically provable laws and theorems and reminds us that God is here in our world, even when we want to put God on the sidelines. You know, in some senses, it's easier if God isn't involved. If God doesn't care, then we're left to our own devices with no repercussions. Live and let live. C'est la vie. Laura Schaefer was a saint. She wasn't perfect, but she dared to step out of herself, to give to herself for others. That is the call for us, those who want to follow Christ, to step out of ourselves for others. Remember, we're to love God first, others next, then lastly, self. Our world wants us to take care of ourselves first, then others, and God, well, you know, God, whatever. I'm here to tell you, God is not, well, whatever. God is here, right now. God is making a difference in our world. God is working in our world in spite of our efforts to ignore him. God is engaging people who will be engaged. God is strengthening the weak and casting out demons. God is even hitting some folks upside the head. The saints of God are still here as well. I had firsthand experience with many of them last weekend during Lobster Fest and after. I also had an experience of a saint several weeks ago, one who had no idea that she was a saint of God acting to fulfill God's purpose in Nauvoo, Alabama. Her name is Jane, and I had known her many years ago in a different time and different place in the world. Our paths had been loosely intertwined for about 40 years, but we were never close friends. In the last few years, we've found a real connection. And so because of that growing connection, we ended up serving on Curcio staff together as spiritual leaders. On the first day we arrived at Camp McDowell, there were many assigned tasks for us to complete and help with. After we had done our assigned duties, Jane immediately moved to a mounting pile of cardboard and paper that accompanied folks to this event. She methodically unwrapped, unfolded, and unbound paper and cardboard, separating it all into white groups of material. My first reaction was, "She's compulsive about recycling. That's nuts. This will take forever to sort through." At the same time I thought those thoughts, I began to help her, not wanting to appear to belay my overworldly busyness and lack of time for things like recycling. After all, I had recently acquired a clothesline and was no longer depending on the dryer that used electricity. What more could be required? Recycling too? But the more I straightened and opened cardboard boxes and unfolded and sorted pieces of paper, the better I felt. This exercise was as good for my soul as 3 miles of fast walking is good for my body. When I returned home from that weekend, I got more bins to accompany what was before just the trash can. And now I'm separating tin and paper and cardboard and plastic and driving it to the recycling center at Winn-Dixie that's not very far from the church. Jane has no idea she's a saint and that she made a difference in the world by her impact on me. That was not her intention. She was just going about her way, being a Christian and living the life she was called to live in response to God. In response to the gospel. Neither Laura nor Jane, nor all the hundreds of thousands of saints of God were striving for that title, the title saint. They just lived lives in response to the gospel that speaks of a God that is real and is present in our lives. A God that lives in us and through us and reaches out to us in the moments of crying and pain and death and mourning and carries us to a new world. A world that's free from those things that bind us in this world. Our God offers us so much more than our world does. Our God offers us hope and life and saints as examples. Thanks be to God. Amen.